Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events on Monday, November 18th, 2013. We're going to be talking a lot of things today. Of course, the stock markets with the Dow and the S&P going over their highs and blah, blah, blah. Are we or aren't we in a bubble? We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about the drop in gold today. We're also going to be talking about the Fed stimulus, China reforms, oil slipping, Iran, many, many other things. So make sure you stay tuned. It's also very important. Many of you listeners are all purchasers of gold and silver, and this program is here to help you understand why it is so important to have gold and silver in your portfolio. But first, let's get to the markets today. We have the gold today. Yes, we do. We have gold today. We have gold down $16 at $1,275. We have silver down 38 at $20.50. Platinum was down $30 today, over 2%. Both platinum and palladium over 3%. I figure that's what
2%.
Over 2%. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Platinum was $14.15 and palladium down $15 at $721. So I probably had a lot of gold and silver probably followed that down those to some degree. Big moves for those numbers. You have the USDX trading down today, down 0.04 at 80.77, along with crude oil breaking at 93 level, 92.95 down 0.89. Let's see where the paper markets finished out on the day. We didn't quite make it. The Dow was up 14 points at 15,976. You also had the S&P. It topped 1,800, but it didn't stay there, down 6.65 at 1791. The NASDAQ was down 37 points, almost 1% at 39.49. 10-year yield, that also dropped a little bit today, 0.03 at 2.68. And, you know, the big talk is all about the stocks. The Dow has basically, Al, surged 900 points since early October. And it's been more than 2 years since the market has had any type of a significant slump. And, of course, we can go back 2 years, and we also know where gold was at. So certainly you see the relationship there. A lot of people are saying we're in a bubble. Yeah, bonds are down a little bit this year, 2.1%. Cash has a near zero return in the money market refund in money market funds. And you also have gold. Of course, we've seen that drop about 24%. But what I find interesting is individual investors have been returning to the market. And we all know.
And you mean the stock market.
In the stock market. And we all know what that is a sign of. Often that is a sign that, of course, that something is reaching a peak when you have the mass individuals, the mass population coming back in. The individual investors poured $167 billion into the stock mutual funds this year. And in comparison, the large institutional investors like hedge funds, pension funds, endowments and insurance companies have only put in $111 billion. So you certainly see those individual investors, and I'm sure if you talk to family members and friends and so forth, they're all tickled pink what their statements are showing on a quarterly basis. They're looking forward to a very good holiday. And, of course, that's what it's all about. You know, there's going to be but you know what, Al? I was watching CNBC, and they were talking about our what the GDP was. And if you take away our inventories, what they're estimating for this last quarter is a 1.5% on the GDP. That's bad for a holiday season.
That's bad. I guess.
That's bad.
But, you know, you're talking about private buyers, the individual buyers coming back into the stock market. And you're associating that with a possibility that it signals that there may be a decline in the stock market in the near future. And just to put it in perspective again, we talk about this on a regular basis on the program. Simple strategy for making a profit in all investments is you buy low and you sell high. And it absolutely follows that when the price is low, at least in a free market, when the price is low, there are very few buyers and sellers. Nobody wants to get the product. That's why the price is low. On the other, and that's when you buy. And then you try to sell it when the price is high. And how do you know the price is high? Because everybody wants it. It's not just a matter of mathematics. It's when the whole crowd floods in and says, yeah, give me some of that. That's when the end is near. We see Dow Jones is also sitting again at 15,975 thereabouts right now. We can expect that it's going to break over 16,000 probably this week. It's not impossible that it could do it today, but probably this week it'll break over 16,000. And we can ask ourselves, what's going to happen then? The 16,000 has undoubtedly been a milestone that people within the stock market industry have been pushing for. Yay, let's get to 16,000. We're going to get to 16,000. They get excited about it. It becomes an objective. They're going to achieve that objective. What's going to happen after they've achieved it? What are the odds that it will go to 17,000? What are the odds that having reached 16,000, new record, new milestone, Will it also be a time for the market to perhaps make a correction? It's a question, not a prediction, but it's a question. It's something we can consider. It wouldn't be surprising. And insofar as there are more people moving into the stock market right now, it's evidence that when the public starts buying, that's generally at the top. And when that happens, signals that you get out. And if you buy low and sell high, right now is a good time to buy gold because it's low and sell stocks because it's high.
And you know, I'm going to go back to one of my favorite words, fundamentals. If there was fundamentals for the stock market to go higher and you have individuals coming in, but that usually is the last phase of the bull market, and you certainly can push the numbers quite high in that bull market. But then I also am going to look to gold. You know, we say buy low, sell high. The fundamentals for gold the highs have never been reached yet.
No, I know.
That's the difference, folks.
Well, there's manipulation to deal with.
There's so much manipulation, and the markets are rigged. So, you know, there's there you have a similar comparison that you can do with gold, but yet it is so totally different. You're comparing paper, and you're comparing something that's real.
And the manipulation is an interesting.
Yes.
The manipulation and of the price of gold is interesting and even a positive event. All right, as annoying as it is to see the price artificially suppressed, it also guarantees that those who get in while the price is still artificially suppressed get in and stay in. You're going to see the day when the forces favoring suppression are dissipated and gone, and when they do, all of that profit, it's like holding that beach ball underwater in the swimming pool. When they finally lose the ability to suppress the price, it's going to increase dramatically. The price manipulation and the price suppression for gold guarantees a significant long-term profit. Now, what's going to happen in the next month? I don't know. But what's going to happen in the next year or two? I don't think there's much doubt about it. Gold is going to go up significantly, and it won't be done in 2 years, in my opinion. I think it'll continue to rise for God only knows how long. But right now we're in one of those little we are in a significant correction, not a little correction, a significant correction. But it is low. Compared to what it should be, it's low. Now is a good time to buy.
And what you're hearing a lot, I've heard a lot of financial planners on, you know, the mainstream media financial programs talk about, hey, take profit off the table. I've been, you know, somebody asked my opinion, I've been telling them, you know, for a while now, you're making a profit? Pull it. Take some money off the table. Protect it. That's how you gain. That's how you turn a paper investment into a real investment. And so it's a great way to protect the paper investments that you have. Begin pulling it out. You don't have to cancel it out 100%.
It's not just a question of protecting your investment in the sense of protecting the investment. For example, you have stocks. Okay, some people are saying, take the profits you've made off the stocks, or at least some of them now, and get them out of here. Why? Why would you do that? And the answer is to avoid whatever risk is inherent in the stocks. It's like going to Las Vegas and rolling 7 at the crap table. All right? Fine, I hit 7, I win. All right? Let it ride. Roll them and hit 7 again. Let it ride. You can get to the point where you are so sure you're going to win that you may run the dice 7 consecutive passes. But you hit that 8th pass and you let it ride for the 8th pass and all of a sudden you get wiped out. The risk is always there, and right now it's probably rising in the stock market.
Well, the times today are a lot different than it used to be. At one point in time, you could buy IBM, you could buy Boeing, you could buy some of these GEs, you could ride the stock. People retired on the dividends that were paid. They were good companies. Markets weren't rigged. Today, it's a different story. Markets are rigged. You're not going to, when you have all the computer trading, when you can have a flash crash. I mean, there's too many things that can go on. Stocks are meant to trade today. They're not meant to hold. And when you begin to make profits on stocks, you sell it.
Yeah,
and
precisely
you turn
because
it into
risky.
Something else.
It's more risky
so
than it has been in the past.
Eliminate the risk. You know, they are not.
Well, you reduce the risk.
You reduce the risk.
Yeah, that's it. You can't eliminate risk. I don't care where you go.
There's always
an element of risk.
That's correct.
But some investments have a huge or a relatively huge capacity for risk, and others have relatively modest.
What happens is people...
So you're looking for low risk and high return, if you can find it.
People are told to hold, don't sell. And the next thing you know, you have corrections. Then they never sell. You have a pull, and it's okay to sell stocks that you've lost money in. You can reposition your funds sometimes, folks, and to where you can, quit bleeding, quit throwing good money after bad, and reposition yourself. That's what your stockbroker should be doing. That's what your financial planners should be doing.
Well, you do that if you can grasp the fundamentals. And it looks like realistically, this particular investment is not going to go up again in the near future or perhaps even the foreseeable future. If your fundamentals say, look, this is going up. I know it's going up. We're just having a correction here. But this thing's going up and it's going way up. All right, then you hang on. If the fundamentals fundamentals and long-term investment are almost synonymous terms.
Here's the fundamentals for the stock market. Fed stimulus. This is out of Paris, out of the AP. Hopes that the U.S. Federal Reserve will continue to support the world's largest economy and a new reform effort in China. Of course, shored up today's markets, particularly in the U.S., where the main stocks indexes were broke new ground. You had the catalyst advance from Janet Yellen last week. Of course, everyone knows that she's slated to become the next Fed chairman. She has a strong support for the Fed's low interest rate policies. No, she's not going to go against anything. She's going to continue doing what they're doing. And she doesn't believe that the stock market is in a bubble. So, you know, they're not going to change anything. So all the Asian markets, the European markets, they were all happy. You know, they're all going to get their stimulus from the U.S. stock market, from the U.S. Federal Reserve. And then the Asian markets have been supported by China's announcements of more details to its economic and social reform programs, including opening state industries to greater competition, loosening its one-child policy, and abolishing its labor camps. Interesting. So, you know, they've been faced, the leadership over in China, they've been faced with this pressure to kind of replace some worn-out economic model after some of their growth have slowed in the second quarter. Their growth has slowed because the U.S. has slowed. The world has slowed. And I think the one that's interesting is easing a one-child policy. I mean, they have so many people over there. So what? And you know, if things are slowing down, how are they going to sustain that many more babies unless they want to populate the world?
They have a morale problem that they have to deal with. And because one of the things that's happened is because they only allow one child per couple, right, in order to try to control their population growth, it is part of the Chinese culture to value male babies more so than female babies. And the result is there's a significant difference in the number of boy babies and girl babies. There's way more boy babies than girl babies. And the result is you've got young men that are sitting around wishing they could even see a woman, let alone marry one. And it's a cause for a certain amount of stress within the society. Right? Those Chinese, those young men, those young Chinese men, they need to see some women. And they can't continue this one-child policy in conjunction with favoring the male child over the female. They can't keep those two things going without having creating great social distress.
Then they must have some pretty deeper and severe problems that you know,
I think they
haven't
have
really
lots of problems. I don't think China, I'm not optimistic about China. They're going to be something like a flash in the pan, in my opinion, just because their population problems, their pollution problems, their disease problems. I was listening to someone talk about disease in China just in the last couple of days, and they were pointing out the number of, some sort of an infection in the liver. It's just rampant over there. The number of people with cancer is rampant. They've got huge disease problems in that country. And all of it points to a moment where they can have their own little catastrophe. And who knows, maybe it'll be a good thing for them. It'll be painful and terrible and tragic. But on the other hand, maybe they'll thin the population by 20%. Who knows? Maybe that would be, you know, from some perspectives, they might regard that as a good thing. I don't know, but they have trouble in front of them. We have trouble in front of us. They have trouble in front of them. They have certain advantages, but they got a bunch of problems. So we'll see.
Well, there's a lot of problems everywhere. I don't think we have enough time. I wanted to talk about the price of oil slipped below around 93 a barrel today ahead of the negotiations in Geneva. Of course, that is to curb Iran's nuclear program. They're going to resume the talks this week with the U.S., Britain, France, Russia, China, and Germany. And, of course, that is all aimed at resolving a decade-long standoff over their nuclear program. Negotiations failed to reach an agreement last week, but the U.S. administration is hopeful The two U.S. administrative officials said last week that Iran would only get limited and temporary relief from economic sanctions, so I'm not quite sure what that will all do.
It means it'll be more of the same no matter what happens.
Mm-hmm.
From my perspective, they say in the Bible, they holler, peace, peace, but there is no peace. That's what we're listening to, in my opinion. The Middle East will be turbulent until the return of the Messiah. And up until that time, you can expect trouble, trouble, and more trouble. What we can expect right now is Frank to play the music because it's time for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
I just wanted to remind the listeners, if you're looking for Silver Eagles, you better give us a call. Premiums from wholesalers went up today. There's only going to be 2 more release dates from the Mint on 2013. That's the year, 2013 Silver Eagles. After that, 2014s are not scheduled to come out until January 14th. Now, that doesn't say that the Mint might not release them early, but at this point in time, the date is January 14th. So, so I would expect premiums to go higher. I expect delivery delays, and I'm not, we go through this every year. You think they would... They should be able to
anticipate
the problems and so forth and have an easier transition from year to year. But, hey, it's still the government, folks. But anyway, So,
it's still a government. I don't even know if it's the government, but it's a government. Something that passes for a government. What is it? I don't know.
So if you're looking for Silver Eagles, you better get it. Yeah, I was shocked. Premiums went up last week, just the last latter part of the week, and I was a little shocked that they even went up today, but they did so. And
even when the price of silver is going down, the premiums on the Silver Eagles is going up.
And the stories are going to start coming out, oh, the shortages in silver and blah, 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 blah. We do know that the U.S. Mint, I mentioned this last week, returned 600,000 planchets because they were not up to code from the U.S. Mint, so they actually returned them. I'm sure that had a little bit of a impact on the amount of Silver Eagles they have. But the way the U.S. Treasury sells their Silver Eagles, there are a limited amount of wholesalers signed up at the U.S. Mint, what, 8, 9, 10 of them. And on Mondays, these people, these wholesalers, make their orders to the U.S. Mint. The prices are then locked in on Tuesday. So, and that's how the pricing and the Silver Eagles are sold. And then, of course, those wholesalers distribute it throughout the U.S. to various wholesalers, and then they get to us. So you do pay premiums. We do have silver rounds available, 90% silver, Morgan silver dollars. If you're looking for the silver, it's a great time to be buying it with the any everything is. So give us a call at 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
I want to remind folks about, we talked earlier in the program about the markets being rigged. And if you're listening to the program for the first time, you might sit back and say, oh, that's crazy talk. If you're not really a fan of gold and the markets in general, the idea that the markets are rigged and manipulated, it sounds like the rantings of people that are involved in conspiracy theories and got their tinfoil hats on too tight. But there's absolute evidence that's undeniable that the markets have been rigged since the Reagan administration. All right, this is 20 years or thereabouts. I don't recall when this started, but they enacted the Plunge Protection Team. And the Plunge Protection Team was intended to stop the stock markets from taking a sudden and dramatic plunge. I think they set the limit at something like 400 or 500 points in a single day. Now, people sit back and say, well, yeah, that was just to protect. We didn't want to see the markets suddenly panic and go into a free fall and drop 2,000 points in a single day. So it just made sense. Okay, made sense. I'm not arguing that. But the Plunge Protection Team, by law, manipulates the stock markets. Right? And it's been going on for 20 years or more. It's not a new situation. This isn't something sneaky and, oh my gosh, some idea where people have just now realized they're manipulating the markets. No, they've been doing it by law. Now, well, the Plunge Protection Team only stopped the market from falling dramatically on a single day. But once you allow that kind of manipulation, it's not long before somebody says, well, if we can keep it from going down, why don't we also make it go up? Huh? The markets are manipulated. There isn't any question about it. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's law. Some of it's law. Some of it's also secretive. But regardless, the idea of manipulation in general, nothing unusual or foreign about it. It's been taking place for 20 years or more. What, Melody?
Well, I mean, we've also seen to some degree the manipulation through the it comes in various forms, the housing market, the real estate loans. You've seen all these banks do what they need to do to all their manipulation of currency trades. I mean, you've had the rigging of the LIBOR rates. I mean, there's so much insider trading going on that, folks, you don't have a chance.
Well, you have a chance. You have a chance, well. But I mean, it's you're playing against the house. Okay, you have a better chance probably in Las Vegas than you do in the conventional stock markets right now. I would bet you that if you calculated the percentage profit that the house makes at a casino in Las Vegas on the craps table or the roulette wheel or whatever, and you compare that to the profits that can be made in Wall Street, and I'll make you bet that Wall Street is a riskier gamble for the for the typical investor than it is to go to Las Vegas. Las Vegas, they've got a fairly good, you know, some people win on the slots. Most people lose, but some people win. And it's a higher percentage of winners, I'll bet you, in Las Vegas than it is on Wall Street. I don't know that to be true, but I believe that's probably the case.
And speaking of gambling, there is Congress, this week, two lawmakers introduced bills over the summer that would legalize some form of internet gambling nationwide. It's been changed in a new one. Jim McDermott, a Democrat from Washington, again introduced a bill that would tax federally sanction online wagering. You know, the federal government needs to have their money.
Yeah, that's
online.
What it comes down to. It's not like, guess what? We're here to help you. No, we're not. We're here to tax you. And we're going to give you a brand new activity that you're going to just love, including paying us taxes. Right?
It would compel online operators to hand over up to 12 cents of every dollar. The federal government would take 4 cents. The state or tribe in which the gambler is playing could also opt to collect 8 cents on the dollar. And
cents on what dollar? The dollar bet or the dollar that they earned in profits?
Every dollar players deposited.
That guarantees, I mean, that just makes, that takes all the, it's no longer a gamble. You're going to lose, folks. You got 12% against you up front. You understand?
Cents,
you only have an 88% chance of winning on your bets. That's a virtual. Keep playing. Watch and see what happens.
Nevada, New Jersey, Delaware, they do have some sort of legalized online gambling now, and some other states are weighing the issue. Morgan Stanley predicts by 2020, online gambling in the U.S. will produce the same amount of revenue as Las Vegas and Atlantic City markets combined, $9.3 billion.
Well, that's pretty interesting, but let me ask you this, Melody. Living in the world with the National Security Agency monitoring our phone calls and our email and the rest of that sort of thing, and recognizing they can tap into our computers if they want to, what do you suppose the chances are that internet gambling is going to be even half as legitimate as the gambling in Las Vegas?
I hope it works better than Obamacare.
Everything's going to work better.
Yeah, but you know what, Al? How many people out there, well, gee, I don't do anything wrong, so I don't care. You know?
Well, you will. Stick around. They'll think of something. They'll say you think of something you've done wrong before this is all over. What have we got? What else, Melody? What's next?
And, excuse me. That's it.
Well, I've got one here from Morningstar. And the headline is, Markets Turn Pavlovian on Fed Cues.
Oh, I have a question now before you go on.
Oh.
According to Russian Times, if an agreement is reached between P5 plus 1 and Iran on their nuclear enrichment, Israel and the Saudis will attack Iran and destroy the enrichment facilities. What say you? That's it from Ike.
Not impossible. I think that Israel might do something, even if they thought there was an agreement coming. Israel may do something, anything from bombing Syria to perhaps bombing Iran, just to destabilize the situation over there and kind of move attention in a different direction. I'm not making a prediction. I'm just saying it wouldn't surprise me. But Israel will march to the beat of its own drummers. And if they think they've got to do something to guarantee their survival or increase the probability, they'll do it. No one thinks the Israelis are short on courage, all right, audacity. So we'll watch and see. Is it possible? The truth of the matter is, it's possible. And are they likely to actually, is Israel likely to attack Iran in the midst or immediately after some sort of a new agreement? That's not likely, because Israel, in a sense, if you could get an agreement that involved half a dozen major nations with Iran, and Israel attacked Iran, Israel would be essentially insulting, disrespecting those other six nations. Will they accept that? Is that a danger that Israel's, you know, will those nations accept that insult, or will Israel wind up paying more, you know, than they would gain from attacking Iran? Again, it's all a crapshoot. Who knows? We need to call a prophet. Melody, call the prophecy hotline. Used to be the, what was it? Used to do the fortune tellers.
999?
I don't remember. There was Dionne Warwick used to have one of these operations where he called called one of the fortune tellers to find out what was going to happen. They're the ones that can tell you the rest of it. Everything's possible. Nothing's certain. That's where it goes down right now. What else do we have, Melanie?
It also tells me just how much of a mess everything is.
Oh,
and how so little focus is on so many other countries that are just exploding and ready to explode if they haven't already. I mean, the whole area, I mean, it's just a mess. And,
yeah, and it's
I don't
not
going
to get better.
No, and I don't think with... To me, it's like, why now? Why are they having this meeting now with Iran when everything else is... It's just deteriorating so rapidly in those areas. So, maybe that's why. But anyway,
you know,
go ahead.
It's cheaper to meet with them than it is to bomb them right now. It may be that we're so broke we can't even. It may be that we finally reached a point, Melody, that we don't have enough resources left to invade another country. I know that's shocking. A lot of people say, "Oh my gosh, you mean we're so broke we can't even invade another country?" Well, it might be.
I don't know.
We'll have to watch and see.
I don't know. You have the government has gained $1.6 trillion from quantitative easing.
Yeah, that's true. We had that. We've got an article that's coming from City AM, which is a conservative English publication. And what they point out is half a decade of rock-bottom interest rates and loose monetary policy have delivered an astonishing windfall to governments around the world. Low interest rates, okay? Loose money policies by the central banks have delivered an astonishing windfall to governments. Now, these low interest rates and loose money policies by central banks have been justified as a means of stimulating the European economy, the American economy, the global economies. That's the justification. But the gist of this article is that principal beneficiary is not the economies, and certainly not the average people of the world, or the United States, or the European Union, and so on. The principal beneficiaries have been the governments. Why? Because governments are borrowing, 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 and when we have zero interest rates, it means they don't have to pay back much in the line of interest. Right? They get to borrow almost for free. What does that mean? It means during the last 5 years, under the pretext of quantitative easing, for example, just as a general headline, government has been able to grow just because borrowing costs have been reduced. The article continues. It says, by contrast, older savers with significant assets, government's doing well under the system, older savers with significant assets have been hammered, losing out on huge amounts of interest. Okay? If you got your money in a bank account, got your money in a bond, in bonds, even to a lesser degree the stocks, what are you getting on as a return on your investment? So long as they're holding interest rates down close to zero, generally speaking, you're not making much on your investment. Maybe you're even suffering a loss when compared to inflation. And they point out the older savers with significant assets have been hammered, losing out on huge amounts of interest. Younger households, which are net borrowers, have benefited. While contrary to popular perception, banks have only gained by a small amount, and many have actually lost out. Now, that's an interesting argument, and we don't have data here to look at, but I don't doubt the McKinsey Global Institute allegedly put this study together, and they're probably correct about it. Younger households, net borrowers, have benefited. They get to borrow for very low interest rates. But if you've got any money to lend, and that's what you're doing if you're investing, in most instances, you're lending to somebody else. Right? Odds are, as a lender, you are losing your assets. You have low interest rates. We have loose monetary policy. You're dealing with inflation to some degree, and particularly low interest rates. You're not getting a fair return on your dollar. You are losing some of your investment dollars. That's part of the point there. Younger households, of course, because they borrow, they don't have savings to lend, but they are borrowers, they're doing well. I hear the music. Frank is doing a little music in the background. All right, so we've got a break loose here and give some more commercial announcements. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. And as we broke for commercial, I was halfway through an article from City AM, which is an English publication, and they simply calculate that the governments of the world have reaped a $1.6 trillion profit over the last 5 years based on lower interest rates and loose money policies by the central banks. The governments have gained. They have grown larger and more powerful under these low interest and loose money policies. So we just want to point out, younger households, they benefit because they borrow at cheaper prices. Older households, older savers, they're losing because their capital is being eroded to some degree by inflation and also by low interest rates. The banks are not doing as well as everyone expects. Says U.S. banks have seen a $150 billion boost, but there's been a slump in European banks. They lost $230 billion since the economic crisis of 2008. Life insurance has been particularly hard hit by low yields on bonds that they'd previously relied on. And then they go into a sentence here It says, and there, this is not quite clear, the authors of the research concluded that the continuation of low interest rate environment for several more years could threaten their survival. It's not clear who they meant by their survival. They might have been referring to life insurance companies. They might be referring to bonds. Right? They go on and they point out that for United Kingdom homeowners will be more exposed when the interest rates do rise. The report estimates that for every percentage point hike in effective interest rates, annual household debt payments could increase by 19%. In other words, suppose if the interest rates rise 1% in the European Kingdom, England, the average homeowner's total debt could increase by 19%. Now, it's not 19% of everything he earns, you understand. It's just 19% of whatever his debt is. And this is only, they're only talking about the United Kingdom. But that's just untenable. You can't just cause people's debt to increase by 19% and expect that there isn't going to be some sort of a catastrophe. You can't make that. The average person is living hand to mouth as it is. How will they continue if their debt is increased by 19% in reaction to a 1% increase in the interest rates? That's a problem for England. It doesn't say that the same thing would happen here in the United States, but we can assume I don't know if it's the same ratio. I don't know that it's the same ratio. If it's 19% in England, it might be 5% in this country. I don't know what the ratio is going to be, but I would bet that we're still going to see something similar. And it brings to mind another point. You know, we talk about Obamacare. We fixate on it over the last 2 weeks because it's been a great debacle. And there's new news and information coming in on Obamacare on a regular basis, and nobody knows what to make of it exactly. But it becomes increasingly apparent that Obamacare is going to fail just because of its own internal contradictions and mathematical absurdities. Here's an example. Obamacare has mandated that anyone who has full-time employment, if you're a full-time employee, then the company has to kick in X number of dollars for Obamacare. Well, the company said, ha, 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 we can handle that. We'll just cut everybody from working 40 hours a week to 35 hours a week. Right? And then they're no longer full-time employees. The government responds, and they said, no, if full-time employee, it will be returned back to something like 33 hours per week. Anybody working more than 33 hours per week. The private employers are responding and saying, all right, we'll cut back to 30 hours a week. Huh? Well, everybody can see where this is going. And the government, no matter what they do, if they say everyone who works over 1 hour a week, and the employers are going to say, okay, we're going to only employ you for a half hour a week, so they can avoid the costs of Obamacare. Now, insofar as Obamacare is going to be paid for, at least in part, by workers, what do we know about people who've seen their hours reduced from 40 hours a week to 30 hours a week? We know that their income has just been cut by 25% as a consequence of Obamacare. And that doesn't include what they're supposed to pay on Obamacare. If you used to work 40 hours a week and now you're working 30 hours a week, you're only making 75% as much as you used to. Your income has been cut by 25%. And then the government says, oh, and you've got to kick in a couple $100 more a month for Obamacare. You can look at these realities, just pragmatic, objective realities, and realize there's no way they're going to put this thing together. And that's just one illustration of the kind of madness that is behind Obamacare. This thing's going to blow up. Although it might not happen before the 2014 election, the Republicans might not let it die. They're the ones who wanted to postpone it, said, no, we got to stop. The Democrats said, no, we've got to have it. Now they're sitting back, and the Democrats are saying, you know, maybe we don't need to have this. And the Republicans are saying, oh, yeah, we've got to stretch this out.
Yeah, but, you know, you're seeing the employees damaged by less hours. However, I believe corporations, businesses can't afford to continue to pay the benefits that they're paying. And there's certainly a lot of these big corporations certainly are sitting on tons of money and so forth. But your mom and pop shops, your smaller businesses, your mints, those are the ones that are going to get hit. Sure, they can reduce the number of hours, but if they're forced to continue the health care, they can't afford it. So you're going to continue to see more employment, no matter whether it stays or whether it goes.
What do you mean more employment?
More unemployment.
Unemployment.
You're going to see more unemployment whether the Obamacare stays.
The thing is a
disaster. Stays or whether it's successful.
It's a mathematical disaster.
I've said from the beginning that the insurance companies, the reasons all these cancellations and the reasons they're not compliant to the affordable health care is they want to eliminate the risks because they're in dire straits. You know, we talk about the rates, we talk about the stock market, we talk about how it affects the government and how much money they've created this amount, they spent this amount, but it also funnels in through like the insurance companies. I mean, a lot of their assets are is all reinvested into bonds. It's all reinvested back into the stock market. So, I mean, whether Obamacare is successful or it fails, the whole system is still at risk.
No, I know. I understand, and that's part of the reason why we keep harping about buying gold. I mean, the system, and what is the essence of the system, Melody? Paper debt instruments. And I've been telling this for 5 years now, what can't be paid won't be paid. The paper, there is too much debt. They can't repay all of the debt. That means the paper debt instruments that memorialize the debt are going to be repudiated by inflation or by express announcement that, gee whiz, we're sorry, we can't pay on these bonds, these stocks, whatever. And it's not a small thing. It's not 10% or 20% that's going to be lost. When this thing goes south, in my opinion, if you're holding paper, you're going to lose between 10 and you will perhaps keep 10 to 20% of your original investment. I expect you're going to lose 80 to 90%. I won't say it's going to, when's it going to happen? I don't know. But the debt is too great to ever be repaid. And the point, the implication, this is all inherent in a paper debt monetary scheme. If your wealth is stored in a piece of paper, you are vulnerable. Your particular piece of paper may work out well. You may do fine. You may profit dramatically. But on average, you show me 100 people who have paper debt instruments, and I'm willing to bet you that 90 of those people are going to lose most of their money within the next couple of years. The paper is the essence of this system. And the idea of these imaginary fiat dollars and fiat, the whole thing becomes just an incredible scheme. How do you get away from it? And the answer is you take your money, what you pass is for money today, you take your paper fiat dollars and you trade them in for something tangible. Again, land, guns, bullets, food, water, water storage devices, water for purification devices, gold and silver. To get something real, because your paper is not, and it can't be made good. Some of it, sooner or later, has to be. And everyone knows this who looks at it. It's not rocket science. It's like lending money to somebody who's already using his MasterCard to pay off his Visa, to pay off his American Express. If you know someone's already doing that, do you really want to lend him more money? Because all he's doing is using your money to pay off the debts he's got. He's not producing anymore. He's going deeper into debt. He's trying to just kick the can down the road. It is not a good sign. Got an article here that we won't get to completely today, but Again, markets turned Pavlovian on Fed cues. This is from Morningstar. And they point out that more easing, they're talking about the stock market jumps whenever the Fed says, we're going to continue with quantitative easing. And the market says, yay, and the market jumps. On the other hand, if someone comes out and says, we might start to taper, and the market says, boo, and the market tanks. Right? And the gist of this article is they're saying that the markets are Pavlovian. The Fed makes a move. They just do a head feint. They just say, we might do this, and the markets move one way, or then the next day they say, no, we might do that. The markets move in the opposite direction. The article tries to show us that this is a Pavlovian response, all right? But there's no reasoning. They say it's not based on any type of reasoning, and I agree with that. I don't agree that it's Pavlovian, but it's not any type of reasoning, or at least not much. No reasoning means, when you're making investments, no reasoning means no reference to fundamentals. The only thing the market, the investors are responding to are artificial stimulus that's happening right now, short term. But referring to the market's reactions as merely Pavlovian denies the argument that the markets are manipulated. They are manipulated. They are controlled. And people understand that. We get it. And therefore, when they do something to control the market or indicate how they're going to control the markets respond. Now, here's the question they pose in this article, or at least one of them. They point out that more easing, more quantitative easing, means the economy is weak. Right? Right now, the Federal Reserve is pumping $85 billion a month into the U.S. economy. And when they threaten to stop pumping $85 billion into the U.S. economy, guess what? The stock market goes down. Because investors say, we can't make it without the $85 billion a month. And when the Fed comes back and says, no, we were just kidding. We'll keep supplying the $85 billion a month, then the stock markets go up. And the question they're saying, more easing, more quantitative easing, means the economy is weak, which is exactly right. The reason the Fed is pumping $85 billion a month into the economy is because the economy is weak. So does that mean if the economy is weak, do you really want to make those investments? If the only thing that's really supporting the stock market right now is the Federal Reserve's willingness to pump an additional $85 billion every month into the economy, is it really wise to invest in stocks? You know? If the markets can't stand on their own, if the economy can't stand on its own, how much sense does it make to invest in it? The argument is that they keep pumping $85 billion a month into the economy, and sooner or later the economy will get stronger and the markets will be truly justified in going up. That's the argument. But there's not much evidence to support it. That's a certain amount of wishful thinking. So my point is, as long as the government is pumping $85 billion into the economy, and that's the only way it holds together, and the stock market stays up, as long as they're pumping that $85 billion a month in, maybe it's a good idea to invest in something else like gold, like silver. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.